Teaching Tax Flow podcast, where the goal is to empower and educate you to legally and ethically minimize taxes paid over your lifetime.
Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. Today on episode 76, we are going to look at those top three parental tax strategies. So before we do that, as always, let's take a brief moment and thank our episode sponsor.
Are you leaving money on the table? Are you an accredited investor seeking new and exciting investment opportunities? Look no further than Integrated Investment Group, your trusted partner in financial success. At IIG, the focus is on delivering exclusive investment options tailored to your unique needs and goals. Contact them today and let their expert team guide you toward your financial aspirations. Wondering if you qualify as an accredited investor? Visit teachingtaxflow.com/IIG to find out and take the first step towards a brighter financial future. Integrated Investment Group. Your path to financial success begins here. Securities offered through Cabin Securities. Member FINRA, SIPC.
Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. Exactly as I said here in that intro. But as always, we have a great topic we are going to look at today, especially related to those who are parents. So it's about time those kids start paying you back a little bit, you know, as they always make you feed them and take care of them. And frankly, you got to keep those little buggers alive, you know, from birth till, some of us, until you get much, much older. But without further ado, let's dive into this very, very interesting topic to me, because I have a toddler, of course. So Chris Picuro, welcome back, man. How you doing?
I am amazing. How are you doing, Mr. Johnny T?
Hey, I'm doing good, man. I got, you know, my little toddler's at daycare right now, probably, you know, finger painting all over herself. So it's a good topic I think we're going to touch on today.
Well, John, interestingly enough, we've had many conversations about the daycare situation and how you absolutely love all the notifications of everything that your daughter does. And you love when your phone goes off every time she sneezes and the daycare is letting you know that she four of her six apple slices and kindly threw the other two away in a napkin.
Hey, it's better than, you know, she ate four out of six of her boogers. So although I'm sure, this is awful to admit this, you know that. Usually those notifications are off only because, again, we know that our wives do not listen to this show, or at least let's hope they don't, because I will be in trouble after this one. I always know my wife babysits that app and she loves every notification that goes off. So if it's an urgent thing, like, you know, she fell off a swing or, you know, she ate a rock or something like that, my wife will call me and then I can say, oh yeah, I seen that. I'm right on it. So kind of play into it. But
exactly. We know that usually there's one parent that's a little more tuned in to the micro activities of the toddlers.
That, you know what? I think we mentioned this in our event that we did last week. So it was the Q&A with the CPA, which thank you everybody that chimed in for that, all of our premium members. Great event again, as always. And Chris, I think we referred to a lot of things as situationally dependent, right?
Correct.
So instead of saying, oh, well, it depends, right? So, you know, now that I get in these conversations, it's like, well, you know, situationally dependent. Let's talk about those little... I was going to say something else, but the little people that are dependent on us for their well-being. So let's tie this in. Obviously, this is a tax-related podcast. So let's talk about, we'll call it tax benefits, tax opportunities, et cetera, in here. But I know we got three of them. So I'll let you get us kicked off with this one. I know you got a couple, definitely not toddlers. I remember when they were on your end. But let's talk about this. Some people may not know. Some people, you know, they may have one, two, or multiple children, and they think that the only thing they can do is check that box, you know, when it comes time for tax preparation saying that they have dependents. So let's talk about some of these top three, or not say some of them, let's talk about the top three tax strategies for parents.
Yes, so there are many tax strategies for parents. We're going to focus on parents of younger children at this point. You know, some of these could be used for older children, but these are going to be parents of younger children, let's say age 20 and younger. So the first one, John, in no particular order, of course, would be contributing to a Roth IRA. Now, we know, oh, shameless plug, there's an episode about Roth IRA conversions. There's an episode about the difference between tax-free income and growth and tax-deferred. So if you are scratching your head right now thinking, dang, I missed those episodes, pause and go download those and throw a five-star review in. But let's move forward. On the Roth contribution, you might be thinking, that's an odd one. Well, I want you guys to think about this. You know, we know that it's very important for tax-free money to grow tax-free and tax-deferred. So let me paint a picture. Let's say your child works. You know, I have my oldest child. He's just turned 15. He just applied for a job at Kroger, okay? Oh, I shouldn't have said that name because they're not a sponsor of this podcast, although they should deeply consider that. That being said, there's something, and I mentioned this before, called the rule of 72. And that means that you take your average rate of return divided that, or 72 by that number, and you get the amount of time it takes money to double. So if the average rate of return is 8%, every 9 years, money will double. So if my son's 15 years old, that money will double five times before he's 60, right? So now at five times doubling, let's say he worked at Kroger, made $3,000. And I say, all right, I'm going to put $2,000 into a Roth IRA in his behalf. Now this works because he has something called earned income. So if he's self-employed or has W-2 wages, now he can contribute that much to a Roth. There's no tax benefit today for contributing the $2,000, but he's not paying any federal tax on that anyway. But that $2,000 doubled five times would be $64,000 in a Roth account, tax-free for him, just for that contribution now. So contributing to a Roth IRA for your child is the first of three parent tax strategies that I would deeply consider. Now, there's another aspect to this. A sub strategy would be if you own a business or you're self-employed, many people have children that work in the business, and assuming the child is doing a job and they're paid fairly, there's income shifting to that child, which could help your tax situation, meaning taking it from your marginal tax rate, that income, into the child's marginal tax rate. That paired with contributing to a Roth can also be very powerful. So remember that Roth IRA, you have to make sure you have earned income, but it grows tax-free and tax-deferred until a qualified distribution.
And Chris, too, I could be wrong on this one, but there is no age minimum for a Roth, correct? So it could be 1 year, 6 months, 19 years, correct?
Absolutely. You are correct, John. As long as the child has earned income.
And so this could really be one of those that you could start earlier on in things, because obviously, like you had mentioned, kind of a sub benefit, or however you referenced it, as you know, paying a child for working within your business isn't really feasible if you own a auto repair shop and you have a 1 year old, right? The 1 year old's probably not doing legitimate work in there, so you don't want to poke the bear. But doing the Roth, obviously, that's a legitimate strategy.
Absolutely. I mean, you could have a child, I would say, probably as early as, you know, 10, 11 and up, if you had an auto repair shop that could potentially help out. Now, they might not be doing the repairs, but they could be bringing, you know, being there in the office with you when you're there. Maybe they're bringing you, you know, when you're under the vehicle, bringing you some tools, learning, helping out with some basic oil changes, little stuff like that. It's absolutely possible that you could have legitimate employment for those children.
Or it's paybacks, right? When those kids were always like, I want milk. I want a bottle. I want this. It's, you know, you go grab me a beverage from the fridge. Not legitimate.
Exactly.
I didn't say that, did I? That's awful. Awful parenting tip.
Well, for Roth contributions can be very, very powerful. So that is a great strategy. And essentially, that tax-free income and growth could be amazing. So the second one pertains to education. We have a lot of content out there. We get a ton of questions on college savings plans, and those are referred to as 529 plans. So a 529 plan is a tax advantage savings plan designed to encourage saving for your future educational costs. Now, it used to be where those educational costs had to be higher educational costs, meaning college or trade school. But now you could actually take 529 plan distributions, I believe up to $10,000 per year, for private school tuition. Now, like a Roth, contributions in the 529 plan grow tax deferred, and as long as you withdraw it for qualified expenses, they're tax free. So you don't have to have earned income for the 529 plan contribution, and anyone can contribute to someone's 529 plan. So once you have a child, creating a 529 plan account is a good tax planning tool. And especially when they're really young, John, and you know they don't have any concept, 1, 2, 3 years old, of maybe at three they realize they're getting a toy for their toy or a stuffed animal. When family members give them birthday gifts or holiday gifts or whatever type of gift, it's really nice when you can slap that into a 529 plan and allow it to grow tax deferred and then essentially tax free.
Awesome. And that's another good one, you know, that I think a lot of people, you know, probably don't think about really. It's, you know, maybe they see it mentioned in a publication or on a podcast like this, and really like everything else we do here, our goal is really just get it out, you know, get this information in people's hands, or I should say in their hands and their ears, and get the wheels turning, right? Because this all falls into, you know, what we always talk about at Teaching Tax School, and that's tax planning and strategy. So part of that plan is obviously knowing what you can and what you can't do, and when you can do it and when you can't do it. And all this really marries into a bigger picture, but it does, right? It's all a cog in the tax planning wheel, if we will. So,
yes, and with 529 plans, it's important to remember that typically the parent is the account owner, the child is the beneficiary. So if you have three children, you could have, like my wife and I do have three 529 plans. It's also important to remember that you can change the beneficiary without tax implications. So let's say your child doesn't utilize the money, or let's say they're a baseball star and they get a full scholarship. You could just change the beneficiary on that, or you can, you know, if they end up having a family, you can move one of their children into the beneficiary role. And actually, there's a new rule that came out. Now it's a little restricted. You have to have the assets in the 529 plan for at least 15 years. So that we might dive into that in another episode, where you can actually convert the 529 plan assets into a Roth IRA. There's a very new rule, and there's some guidance still coming out on that. But the theme is this: with the 529 plan contributions, is there's much more flexibility now than there was before. When those plans first came out, they were designated for typically tuition and fees, and now the expansion of what we consider an educational cost could include technology. You know, college kids don't really buy books anymore. A lot of times they just buy an ebook, or they buy the course materials online. But also the ability to take some of that money out of 529 plans and use it for private high school, private middle school, or elementary school. Now there's some limitations, but that's a huge win, I think, for 529 plan owners. And honestly, what I found in working with clients for way too many years is that when someone establishes a 529 plan for their child, typically grandma, grandpa, maybe the great uncle is a little more generous during the holidays if they know the money is going towards an educational plan.
And, you know, it's not like they're going to run into the bank with a couple hundred pennies, but they might, you know. So you bring up a good point too, Chris. I think just the, you know, from the beneficiary, aka the child standpoint, but also the I guess you say the I don't even know what the term is. What is called grandparents or parents?
Yeah, they're the beneficiary with the.
So who's the one that actually gives it then? Actually, so if there's a, this is a really dumb question that either I'm having a complete brain freeze on or what, but there's a beneficiary, but then who's the person that's giving it? It's like not a beneficiary, obviously isn't the right term.
It'd be a contributor,
there you
really.
Go.
So you would contribute to the plan. There's another special rule, John, because there are some rules with gift taxing. We're going to actually talk about that in a moment. But there's a So typically you can only gift someone approximately $15,000, $16,000 per year without having any type of gift tax implications. That being said, if someone was to contribute $50,000, let's say, right? That would be over the gift tax exclusion for a given year. That being said, there's a special rule with 529 plans that you can take that gift and average it over 5 years. And so in that case, you would say it's the $50,000 gift, it would be $10,000 per year. And now you haven't gone over that gift tax exemption, which we're going to talk about next. Good segue.
And that's a great piece of advice. And we won't dive into that. We'll talk about that in our next little segment here. But that's also something I think that, you know, people, myself included a while ago, right? Like we didn't, if you don't know that there is a limit on that, right? You could go way over, but then it's almost until it's too late. And then you're, you know, obviously there's tax involved in that, which again, moral of the story is to keep the taxes or keep the dollars in your pocket, not shelling them out or making it rain, obviously, on the Internal Revenue Service. So let's dive into that one. So number three, I know we talked about it before we jumped on this recording, is very interesting because it is something that is utilized a lot, sometimes, I wouldn't say unintentionally, but I think there's a lot of questions on this one specifically. People know it exists, but they might not know a lot of the information, limitations, et cetera, around it. So I look forward to this one.
Right. So the final one might seem odd, but it's not, is gifting assets to a child. So that has potentially positive implications on both parties. Let's talk about the person giving the gift. Each year, someone can give, and this is for 2014, up to $18,000 per year. Now, this changes each year. It's indexed for inflation, but it's in general indexed for inflation, not officially, but it's in the tax law that it goes up each year and it gets adjusted. But $18,000 per year can be gifted to anyone. So a grandparent, a parent could gift $18,000. Without having to report anything tax-wise. It's just under what we call the annual exemption amount, okay? So that could be a strategy. Then there's a lifetime estate tax, right? There's an estate tax exemption. And if you go over the $18,000 a year of gifting, then you start eating at your lifetime estate tax exemption. Now, that estate tax exemption is at the highest it's ever been. It's about $13.5 million. So not too many people are running around with that amount that they're concerned about hitting that estate tax exemption. That being said, as early as 2011, the estate tax exemption was $5 million. So once the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act passed, it doubled. And there's a chance it goes down, right? Because we know that the government is in debt quite a bit. And when they look at how to tax people, it's a lot easier for laws to pass to tax people that have passed away than people that are living. It's just easier to pass those laws, right? It's easier to get support on those. So the point is, if you have a significant amount of assets in your estate and you don't want, and you're trying to get under that estate tax exemption, because if you're over it when you pass away, you're gonna pay, depending on what state you live in, up to a 50% tax. Then gifting those assets to a child starts making sense. So you're taking that out of your estate tax exposure. Even though that limit's over $13 million now, this is an election year. It could be a third of that next year. And so that's why gifting could work for the person giving the gift. Now, there's other advantages too. The person getting the gift does not have a negative consequence. They just inherit the property. They just have the property. Now, remember when we did our episode on step up and basis, we talked about some positives and minuses of assets. Typically, you're going to want to do this with cash, potentially appreciated assets, and I'm going to explain that in a moment. So gifting strategy number three, another advantage for the child would be that they are in general in a lower marginal tax bracket than the parent giving the gift. So if the child is paying tax on a capital gain, for instance, instead of the parent, that tax could be significantly less. So that's where there's a couple things. There's that estate tax. You know, we see legally and ethically reduce the tax you pay in your lifetime. It's not all about income tax. It could be about estate tax as well. So this is a good estate tax planning strategy. And then potentially shifting the capital gains. Because let's say I bought a stock for $10 and it's worth $100 per share. And now I give it to my child and my child sells it. My child actually reports the $90,000 worth of income, not me. So there's some advantages as far as maybe shifting capital gains to a child or creating something called a custodial account, something called an UGMA or UTMA, which stands for Uniform Gifts to Minors Act or Uniform Transfers to Minors Act. So those are the types of accounts that are typically used when assets are gifted to a child. Now, the one thing I'm going to say, there's a funny word, John, when I told you about this, you chuckled. There is something called a kiddie tax, and there are special kiddie tax rules that could have a negative consequence with the strategy. That goes beyond the scope of this podcast, but gifting could have a positive estate and income tax effect on someone's situation.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I'm glad we hit on these three. Honestly, again, as I mentioned a little bit earlier on too, it's very important, I think, for people to understand these, even if it's something that you say, you know what, I'm not going to do this right now, but I'm going to do it next year, or I'm going to do it in 2 years. Chris, you made a really, really good point of, these could change, especially during an election year, that these could change significantly, right? So again, I know we mentioned this in a lot of episodes, when you consider tax planning as, a task, if you will, it's very important. The outcome of it is tremendous if done right, but it's not something that you can just kind of set it and forget it. You can't say, you know what, I'm going to do this for my child, with my child in 5 years from now, but then you don't pay attention to it for 5 years because heck, in 2-3 years, even 1 year, it may almost become irrelevant to the bigger picture for your situation. So I really appreciate diving into these three. As a parent of my little toddler, there's always something fun in that mix.
Oh, but my pleasure, John. And I just want you to think about this. We could probably post in the show notes some information about the estate tax. John, as early as 20 years ago, the estate tax was $1 million, estate tax exemption. With the estate tax, top estate tax rate at 50%. And I want you to think about, these are real stories where, imagine a mature aged couple lives in San Diego, California. They don't have much as far as assets, right? Maybe they have a couple $100,000. They are on Social Security. They bought a home for $300,000 30, 40 years ago, right? Well, now that house is worth $2.5 million. They pass away, okay? Their estate owes tax on $1.5 million. Well, it actually more than that if they have $200,000. So let's say it's in an IRA. So now they've got $2.7 million of assets. They're going to owe a 50% tax on $1.7 million. Well, half of $1.7 million is a lot of money. So $850,000. And if they take any money out of their IRA, the state's going to pay tax on it. That's where it gets scary, right? Even though that estate tax exemption maximum is high right now, it can go down in a hurry. Now, and that's why I'm going to, not to plug another episode, but a lot of times when you have a situation like that, you can hedge against the estate tax by purchasing life insurance, and that life insurance policy now secures that family property and it is really there to pay the estate tax. So I can't stress more, if you have questions, we are here to help. We love doing this podcast, but we're doing it as a service, as a giving back to people, our listeners and our teaching tax law community. Because unfortunately, just financial and tax education and literacy is just not taught as much as it should be.
Spot on. And Chris, to that point too, as we wrap up here, a little birdie told me that Teaching Tax Flow may have just created a LinkedIn private group. So I don't know where that, I have no idea where that news came from. It just fell from a tree, right?
Well, we'll have to put that in the show notes, John, and get that out. I think that would be a great idea to do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we literally just did it, folks. So there you go. Like within a matter of an hour of now. So by the time you listen to this tomorrow morning, it won't even be 24 years old. Unlike this being episode 76, you can't even really calculate dog years if something's 76, because what's the dog, like 1,000 years old? I think most dog year calculators stop at like 20 or something. So all joking aside, I know we're talking about dependence. You should be very dependent on the next couple episodes. We got a couple great ones coming up. Everybody be on the lookout for those. As always, we will see you back here next week, same time, different topic, here on the Teaching Tax Flow podcast. Hey, everybody, John Trapolsky here from the Teaching Tax Flow team. Thanks for hanging out with Chris and myself here again on episode 76 as we really, you know, dove into those top three strategies for parents. So, you know, all joking aside, as I mentioned earlier, you know, I will say we always poke fun at our little ones, right? But, you know, they are very dependent on us. And, you know, we could do a lot for them. So go back, share this episode, if you will, but listen to it a couple times. You know, the topics we touched on, it, obviously, we just skimmed the surface. There's a lot of detail we could go in on each and every one of those. And stressing it one more time before we let you go. Things change. They could change often, and they could change very, very drastically. So be sure to consult your tax professional on any questions you have, or drop us a line on social media, the private Facebook group. And as mentioned, if you look below or to the side, usually to the right or right below us here, that link to that new LinkedIn group. So be sure to join either of those. And always, the only dumb question is the question that goes unasked. So we will see you next week.
The content provided is for educational purposes only. We encourage you to seek personalized investment advice from your financial professional. For all tax and legal advice, please consult your CPA or attorney. Investment advisory services are offered through Cabin Advisors, a registered investment advisor. Securities are offered through Cabin Securities, a registered broker-dealer. The content of this podcast does not constitute an offer of securities. Offerings can only be made through an offering memorandum, and you should carefully examine the risk factors and other information contained in the memorandum.